The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
I'm Mike Consol.
And I'm Loretta Klotfelter.
Welcome to Inside the Edition for April 2018. Loretta, the nightmare for retail continues. Or does it?
Yes. And no. So the retail
How are you gonna
market
get off this fence?
with geofencing.
Aha.
So the interesting thing about retail, you know, if we have a story in the April issue which really looks at the future of retail and specifically brick and mortar retail, because we will always be buying things. A lot of that is shifting to buying online, which has been really strong for e-commerce, which has been very strong for industrial, warehouse, last mile space, all of that. But the traditional shopping center has seen some flagging interest. There have been some really high-profile bankruptcies, and it is probably the most talked about property type going on right now. That's certainly been my experience. We had our editorial advisory board last week. Everyone was talking about retail, retail, retail. It's, you know, it is the topic that everyone's talking about. But for the April issue, we wanted to take a step back and not just look at, you know, where retail is struggling right now, but look at some of the new technologies and trends that are on the horizon for retail that might offer a bit of a silver lining for retail investors. So I mentioned geofencing. This is a thing that's starting to happen. You might ask, what is a geofence? It's software and GPS that targets people by their phone when they enter a specific location. So,
before anybody gets creeped out by that, we should say
you're already being chased.
Well, but you're already being chased on the internet. I mean, you go to a shopping site and then you go somewhere else, and what you just looked at on that shopping site is popping up in the right hand rail.
Oh yeah, those ads that follow you around. And because of that, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, if you could track people in real time as they browsed through a store, you're going to get a huge amount of data. And we're finally at the moment where, you know, not only can such data be tracked, but also can be analyzed. This is that story about big data, about, you know, how we're going to use so much information to then, you know, understand people's shopping habits and sort of improve the sales experience. And so that's going to be some really interesting stuff. It's already happening. It will probably happen even more. I'm sure you've heard about some of Amazon's experiments in physical retail, and those do work in a very similar way where there isn't even a checkout. You just walk in, pick items up off the shelf, and walk right back out, and the store is able to track you, track your purchases, and charge them to your account. Now, it's possible to be a little skeptical from this because I don't know if you've ever used the self-checkout at the grocery store.
Oh, yes.
But you know, these sensors are still being developed. Object not in bagging area is a frequently repeated complaint by the machine to me, so I avoid them as much as possible. I can't seem to make them work, and I think that's really what we're going to see as we go forward is more and more adoption of technology, but maybe also some bugs that need to be worked out.
You know, you talk about something like Amazon, and the experience of just going in a store and doing that, I think, is going to bring a lot of people in. Doesn't mean there'll be repeat customers, but obviously Amazon's got a big following. And the other thing that strikes me about the geo-sensing is the opportunity for a store to say, just by virtue of your walking by our store, 50% off of this product. And if you're in a mall situation, a shopping center situation, just spreading the word to other people and creating kind of a miniature flash mob mentality, I think there's just the opportunity to go a little bit viral in brick and mortar might be there.
Indeed. And, you know, if you remember movies like Minority Report.
Yes.
There is definitely the opportunity for, as you walk into a mall, to get a message on your phone offering you a coupon or directing you to a particular aisle or, you know, pointing out different sale items. And, you know, I think that the big challenge as we move forward is going to be issues around privacy and whether people can opt in or opt out of this, and to know how much is being collected and stored and how much of that is linked to their personal data versus just, you know, not necessarily linked to who you are as a person, just as a particular shopper. But, you know, so many of us have given up privacy for convenience. This is the same reason why retailers use rewards cards so that they can track what you buy each time you shop.
Yes.
And this is a lot of this is just taking it to the next level. It's not just knowing what you buy, but where you walked in the store, which aisles you chose, you know, which end caps you paused in front of. And really all of this stuff is going to allow retailers to develop a better sense of who their target customer is, to better serve them, and then to get them to buy even more while they're in the store.
Or, you know, the other thing, I'll tell you, one of my biggest frustrations when I go into a store that I'm not familiar with is finding what I'm looking for. And if they can make that technology direct me without human intervention, because they really don't have a lot of people. And many of these stores, they don't have them well personnelled with live human beings to actually direct you to what you're looking for. If it could be done electronically, that would be a big help, certainly to me and a lot of other people. And you know, this is what you're really talking about in this story is fighting technology with technology. I mean, some of these stores have been taken down by online retailing, the technology involved in online retailing, and now suddenly the algorithm strikes back.
That's true. And I think it's important to also understand that we are going to hit some sort of equilibrium point between e-commerce and physical retail. We're not there yet. And there are some estimates about what those future e-commerce versus physical store market share might be. And it's really going to vary by category type. So based on some Center Square Investment Management research, you know, they're predicting that, well, so right now, currently, e-commerce has a overall penetration of 15% of retail share. But in the future, they're forecasting that goes up to more than 25%, to 28% e-commerce.
Is that the equilibrium point they're estimating?
That would be that's their predicted equilibrium point between e-commerce and physical retail. But, you know, while they think that something like groceries might continue to have only a 10% e-commerce versus a 90% retail share, electronics are probably going to be mostly sold online, 70% on e-commerce, 30% physical retail. And so, you know, knowing what category of retailer you're dealing with will certainly help you sort of think about how much risk is this particular category at from e-commerce.
And then I don't know how much talk there was from sources about the aspect of human beings just being social animals. And a lot of people look forward to, you know, mother and daughter go shopping or friends go shopping or, you know, guys go to Dick's Sporting Goods and get some new athletic wear. I mean, we can't just stay cooped up in our homes.
We can't. And that's, I think, part of what's driving what's really considered, you know, sort of the experiential retail trend. And one of the categories that's doing very well right now is dining, restaurants. Mm-hmm. You know, people are eating out is having a moment. I know we've discussed this before. And so, you know, the restaurant space is actually looking quite strong as far as that goes. And you're going to see more and more emphasis, especially at the shopping mall level, toward making this an experience people want to have and making this, you know, a way to spend time, because, you know, you can't just sit at home all day on the weekend, or I suppose one could, but often people are looking for a place to go, a thing to do. And if the shopping mall can structure itself as that place, movie theaters and, you know, maybe outdoor space for people to gather, you'll see a lot more foot traffic in that sense.
And maybe a little bit better dining experience. I mean, the food court's one thing, and that's fine for children and all, but some of the higher-end malls tend to get a couple really good restaurants in there that are very popular, Cheesecake Factory or a P.F. Chang's. And while they're not, you know, high culinary restaurants, they are very good restaurants, and they certainly are crowd pleasers.
Right, and I think you'll see even more of that as we go forward. The other big trend is the dining hall, which is like a food court, but upscale. But those tend to be a place where instead of featuring, you know, the same, you know, national or international chain fast food restaurants, they often feature local restaurants sort of showcasing, you know, more artisanal and locally created foods. One of the other things to look at is the use of retail as part of the last mile distribution chain. You know, I think that the strongest future for retailers is going to be an omni-channel, being an omni-channel retailer, which means selling both online and in physical stores. And one of the things that you can do is then use your physical store as a last mile distribution center for your products. And that's, I think, another thing that's going to be looked at. In fact, at the board meeting, one person joked the best way to sell sort of a strip shopping center these days is to call it a last mile warehouse and just watch the bids roll in.
I think the consensus is retail is certainly not dead, but it sounds like a lot more technology needs to be brought to bear, and also the experience for the shopper needs to be something that is a little bit more scintillating than was traditional, just opening up a big space with a lot of inventory and a handful of employees to help you find what you're looking for and then check you out.
Indeed. Not dead yet, but certainly facing a lot of challenges and just a lot of disruption and upheaval. I think that the retail market of 10 years from now is going to be very different from what it is today. The shopping experience is going to be very different, and the technology being used to sell products is going to be even more advanced than what's being used right now.
Yeah, I'm already feeling it in some cases. Really, I mean, there's places I go these days where it's clear that there is some real extra effort being made. They understand that they've got to play at a higher level than they've traditionally played. And the other thing I'm feeling is a lot of anxiety about baby boomers getting older, Loretta, and I'm one of them, and the prospects for retirement. And I know you've got an extensive story on retirement in the issue as well. Let's talk a little bit for our listeners about what the latest is on that.
Right. And I think, you know, I think retirement is a big question. It's a big question for people at every age. But the U.S. is, as a whole, on average, getting older, which means that we're going to have more people entering into their retirement years. And that, you know, from an investment perspective and from a real estate perspective, you know, people investing their retirement, you know, people who aren't people at retirement age are going to need different things from their retirement than people who are just beginning to grow their retirement portfolio. And that's really going to be an emphasis on income and safety. And I think we're already seeing that right now. So what's really interesting is the way that we have two really big shifts happening in the retirement landscape. They're happening together, and in some ways they're kind of going to help complement and support each other, I think, as we go forward. One is just the sheer number of retirees we're facing. So many people. So, you know, it's the baby boom by name. And then you have a real shift in what a retirement account looks like over the, you know, what a pension is over the last few decades with the rise of the defined contribution pension fund over the defined benefit, which is really just you get out what you pay in. That's going to have huge implications for retail investment or real estate investment by retail investors going forward. So, you know, what we're seeing is with the shift to defined contribution, that means things like 401ks and their various state analogs, as well as the IRA and Roth IRA sort of accounts. And, you know, those are generally self-directed investment accounts, and they often do not really have a real estate, certainly not a private real estate investment option. You might be able to find a REIT mutual fund available at some companies, but even that isn't always available.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this really has highlighted a problem in the last decade, which is most people are not experts in retirement investing. That's actually one of the beauties of the defined benefit pension fund, is that you have an entire group of skilled, qualified fiduciaries who are, you know, sort of asset allocation and, you know, investment experts who can really make these sort of decisions and, you know, husband these assets over time. Most people don't want that job for their own investment. And that's really why we've seen the rise of the target date fund, because that is in some ways sort of a mini defined benefit account, in that you're outsourcing all of the decision making to the creators of the fund, of the target date fund, which will then shift its asset allocation as you get closer to retirement age, thus better matching your risk tolerance as you get older.
Now, how does that work in terms of somebody, let's say everybody who is in the age of, I don't know, 30 to 35 bracket, would have a certain type of mix, would be put into a certain type of fund that would, as they age and as they get closer to retirement, that same fund would go through some permutations, as you're indicating, and go to a more cash conservation mode, less lower risk, more cash preservation. Is that how the model works?
Yes. And so when you initially invest with your target date fund, you generally just choose a year in which you're going to retire, and it is structured around that concept. The other thing that's been really fueling the growth of target date funds is about a decade ago, they were able to sort of create this default opt-in position for people being set up with accounts for the first time, and target date funds became sort of that default option when you were signing someone up. So if you get signed up for a 401k or through your company, if you just sort of start doing it without really paying attention or making any choices, you would just get automatically placed into the default option, which is a target date, which is generally now a target date fund. These make very good defaults. And thus it just takes all of the thinking kind of away from people. And we've just seen a huge growth in target date asset funds. They now make up almost 20% of all 401k assets, and they also make up a huge amount of ongoing. I want to pull the correct number up, but I believe it's something like 75 to 80% of all new investing.
Wow. And this the target date fund is an opportunity to get real assets involved in the mix, then, I assume, Loretta,
in a way, yes, in a way that hasn't always been available to these plans in the past. Target date funds do have at least some of them, because a lot of these now are being created sort of custom target date funds. So, you know, instead of just buying the, you know, just instead of just setting people up for sort of the out of the box project, a company might organize especially a large company would have its own custom target date fund. So instead of having your own custom defined benefit plan, you now have your custom defined contribution plan using this TDF structure. And that's really where we're going to see the opportunity to invest in private real estate as part of the asset mix. And, you know, again, what real estate does in a portfolio is different than what stocks do, what bonds do, and it provides a particular, you know, the reason why people invest in real estate is that it does, you know, do something sort of, you know, as somebody says, it's uniquely capable of providing a high current yield that's indexed to inflation. And I think that's, you know, having that in the mix is really attractive for people. And so, yeah, we are already seeing different fund management companies making products for these target date funds. I think we're going to see more of that as we go forward. And, you know, I think it's going to be very interesting as we see this sort of ongoing shift, what's going to happen. One thing that people were mentioning in my research is that because of the need for a certain level of liquidity in these funds, they don't have to be daily priced, but you do need to be able to get in and out of the funds. At least you're going to see maybe more open-end funds be able to succeed in this environment rather than the closed-end funds. And again, you're going to see an emphasis on core and core plus real estate versus the more opportunistic. Some of that is tied to the need for income, the need for sort of capital preservation that you're going to see, especially when you pair that with a aging, you know, population with more people in retirement age. You're really going to see those two things really push toward the core open-end fund as a vehicle that can support that sort of retirement planning.
Anything else in the edition you want to highlight, or do you have some coming attractions for the next edition?
Well, I did mention that we had our editorial advisory board meeting last week. We're going to have some information about that in the May issue. Coming up in the May issue. And I can probably tell you more about the meeting then.
Until next month, thanks a lot, Loretta.
Thank you.